call right here. This is not about politics. This is about morality.
Health emergencies can't wait for us to have some theoretical debate about some better idea that will never, ever come to pass.
We are behind every country pretty nearly in Europe in this matter of medical care for our citizens.
I'm a physician. That means you have a right to come to my house and conscript me. It means you believe in slavery.
Hello, everybody. My name is Benjamin Day.
And I am Jillian Mason.
And this is Medicare for All, the podcast for everybody who needs healthcare, just in case that happens to be you. So we hear it over and over that, you know, allegedly the private sector does it better, whether we're talking about education or healthcare or even the fucking criminal justice system. The default Republican, and we also know many times Democratic talking point is that, you know, competition in the marketplace allows the best ideas and the best people, like, you know, of course, Elon Musk, to rise to the top and lead us to a utopian / dystopian future sponsored by Meta. So when something wild happens, like the recent cyber attacks on United Healthcare, which is causing massive fallout throughout our healthcare system over the past 2 weeks, so much so that, you know, the company appears to have paid $22 million in ransom. $22 million in ransom to the hackers who breached their system. And now, you know, the federal government and Health and Human Services are trying to bail them out so the providers can literally survive this. You may not actually have heard that anything is happening because, you know, we just had the Oscars and the State of the Union address. And
it was important.
They had to bury the lead on this one. So, but anyway, this kind of thing, this massive attack, which we'll talk a little bit more about later, makes you question how anyone is still making argument that, you know, the private sector has its shit together. So in this episode, we're bringing in a special guest and political messaging expert, Jordan Berg-Powers, to talk about how we talk about all this stuff, public healthcare, private corporations, and how to message our way out of the corporate hellscape in which we currently find ourselves. Jillian, do you want to introduce our guest?
Hell yes, I do. Hey, Jordan. Jordan Berg-Powers is a consultant and also the former director of Mass Alliance. But most importantly, he is coming up on 30 years of experience in campaigning and organizing for progressive causes and candidates. Been doing this his whole life. Hello, Jordan Berg-Powers. We're so excited to have you.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
Yes, return guest at this point. I think you took my chair in the last episode.
Yes.
That's right. I'm not going to say whether he was better than you, Ben, but...
We're breaking up.
Different. We should learn anything is that, you know, capitalism wants to compete, Ben, but we are just different.
That's true.
Wow. I'm really glad that we've arrived at that so early in the podcast. So we are very excited to have Jordan. And if you want to check out Jordan's first appearance on the show, he was on our My Big Fat American Healthcare episode. But today, we want to talk about this United Healthcare clusterfuck. By the way, I was talking to some construction workers who were doing some work on my house, and they were like, "What are you going to go talk about today?" And sorry, that was my text.
They're following the podcast.
yeah. And I was like, "Oh, we're going to talk about United Healthcare," and they were like, "Oh, we have United Healthcare."
Not anymore, you don't.
I was like, "Well, let me be the first to tell you." So this United Healthcare clusterfuck is like a little bit fun for us, right? Because we get to talk about like the dramatic failures of like a really evil company. But like any healthcare debacle, there are actually some serious consequences that we should touch on. So I don't know, Ben, do you just want to start us off by like just running down like what happened here and what does this United Health scandal look like for people actually on the ground?
Yeah, people don't usually turn to us for breaking news, but I feel like there's been so little coverage of this that we're probably going to be breaking this news to most people who are listening. So, all right, starting on February 21, so good, you know, more than 2 weeks ago now, a group of hackers breached Change Healthcare, which is the largest electronic medical records and medical claims processing platform in the country, about half of all Americans' health insurance claims pass through Change Healthcare, which was bought up 2 years ago by United Healthcare, the largest health insurer in the country. I think the Justice Department actually sued them to try and prevent them from making this purchase, and they didn't succeed. So
what did they know?
Yeah. They said maybe it's a bad thing for one health insurer to have access to the entire medical claims system, including all the other health insurers they're competing against. So, but anyway, different story there. So following this hack, Change Healthcare shut down its entire network, leading to basically complete mayhem in the healthcare system across the whole country. So here's a quote from a recent Yahoo news article. Hospitals have been unable to check insurance benefits of inpatient stays to handle the prior authorizations needed for patient procedures and surgeries or process billing that pays for medical services. Pharmacies have struggled to determine how much to charge patients for prescriptions without access to their health insurance records, forcing some to pay for costly medications out of pocket with cash, with others unable to afford the cost. So, of course, the impact is being felt mostly by us, the sucker patients who get caught up in this. But it has led to this massive financial crisis for hospitals and health clinics and physicians and pharmacies, none of whom are being reimbursed for the care that they're providing since they can't submit medical claims. And provider associations are losing their shit. The federal government is trying to kind of step in, intervene, and bail out providers in the meantime. But as you can imagine, it's a lot of money, and it's a tough thing to fix right away. And this story, it keeps getting crazier and juicier every day. Apparently, United Healthcare made a ransom payment of $22 million to the hackers who breached their system using Bitcoin. P.S. Those are our $22 million, by the way, our premium healthcare dollars that we paid, being used to pay the ransomware. The Russian hackers may have access to all of our medical records, basically, in the whole country. I'm sure that's not going to come back to
haunt. I mean, only half the country.
Yeah. Okay. Right. Unless you've changed healthcare in the last whatever to 5 years, and then maybe they might have your old records. So, I mean, I would truly love to do a whole episode just dwelling on this crazy United Healthcare scandal that is unfolding. But it kind of got us thinking about the broader debate over, distrust of government, hatred of taxes, and the bipartisan worship of market-based solutions. So, Jordan, you've been kind of dealing with anti-government sensibilities like this, not just in healthcare, but also education and housing and so on. How have you kind of navigated that rhetoric in the past? And is this framing you'd like to avoid altogether, the private-public feud?
Yeah, I mean, I think that Robert Reich wrote a really good book about this, in which it's a false dichotomy. There is not a place where you can have a marketplace without government. Marketplaces only exist because governments allow them to exist. The question isn't, is there government involved in our marketplaces or our corporations? The question is, what does government do? Who is it tilted towards? And so I think if we get into the argument about whether or not government can run it or marketplaces can run it, I'll say in both directions, we're actually missing that at some point, somebody has to exchange something for something,
right?
And somebody has to oversee it to make sure it's fair, right? Those are some of the basics. The question is, are we putting in place the things that work for us? And the more that we can talk about what's actually happening, which is that we are all being robbed to make rich people even richer, mm-hmm. right? Like the reason this is allowed to happen, the reason that United Healthcare is allowed to own 50% is because of the 40-year attack on us, on the middle class, on working people, so that we can just, right? No, of course it's bad for competition. They can charge us whatever they want without any oversight. And then what happens is you get this thing, which is they're not concerned about running a business. They're concerned about making profits for Wall Street. And so that means that things like security go out the window because it costs too much. They'd rather pay $22 million a few times, and who cares about our data, than actually spend the money it would take to secure these systems, have good systems, or, God forbid, have more than two and have to actually do it, and you know, it's not that the government doesn't oversee that process. The government oversaw the allowance of their only having two. It manufactures the systems itself. So how they talk to each other is overseen by government. All of these systems could be made to, in such a way to ensure that we are put first. But because of the project, the sort of led by conservatives to undo centering us, centering our pocketbook, centering our livelihoods, our futures, our safety, and instead, worship at the almighty Wall Street. The whole thing has been tilted towards them. The other thing is that that's, you know, part of the project that the right has been successful in the last 40 years is convincing Americans that government is bad at everything. And there have been administration after administration and Democrats that have spent their time agreeing, right? Like, you know, and so you've had messaging that's basically that government's the problem, and you can't simply undo that with just a good slogan or 1 year thing. It's going to take time. But what people can hear, what does cross partisan lines, is the idea that people are being ripped off and that rich people are ripping them off. They understand that. Everyone understands that.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And the if more that we can remind them of that. Sorry.
So you're getting fucked is basically. Yes.
Yeah.
That makes sense. That resonates with me.
It's the reason why Bernie crosses ideological lines. Right. Like it's a very clear message. Like you are being screwed by this system.
You know, I have to say, like, I'm I think about all the time those stop smoking commercials. And so that used to be when we were kids that the messaging was like stop smoking because it's bad for your health. But now the messaging is stop smoking because you're just making more money for the cigarette industry.
who's known that they're killing you and is secretly hurting you.
They kill thousands of their best customers every year. But I was like, wow, that actually does resonate with me. Like, I don't give a shit about my own health, but, you know, knowing that I'm getting screwed by rich people, that speaks to me. Yeah.
Yeah, and I think the other piece is, too, you know, the one thing I tell people, this is true about education. It's true for sure for Medicare for all. It's true for all these things. It's like, you know, to some extent, we have to be honest with people. Like, it's not like Medicare for all it's not like there won't be problems. The difference is that we'll have oversight.
Right.
Like, the reason why we need public schools is not just because they're the best opportunities for people at the margins of society and the only opportunities for Black and Brown communities to ever get out of this fucking hellscape. The other reason is it's the only thing that we can control. We have oversight. If we give it to corporations, they don't care. They just want to make money, right? Like the fear is also, if you allow privatization of public education, it's not just that it's not like, oh, it's going to save money, it's going to be better. You're not going to have a say.
Right.
You're not going to, who are you going to complain to? You lose
accountability. Yeah.
Right. Like who are you going to call? You're going to call a hotline? You ever call for help in this system? Like, congratulations, your child is being screwed by the now private public education. Call this 1-800 number and get through all the AI person to try to talk to a person who has no ability to fix the problem for you.
I like that reframe because like it often feels right, like those of us who are fighting for things like the expansion of the public sector, like Medicare for all or, you know, whatever policies, it feels like we are constantly fighting in this like little binary, right? About, you know, is it public versus private? Is it private versus corporate? Is it, you know, whatever? But you know, we're constantly fighting this notion that government is dangerous, which I actually resent, I have to say, because I do think that the government can be dangerous sometimes.
Yeah,
and I enjoy holding them accountable. but like, that's a progressive value too, right?
That's a progressive value. It's actually the thing that's one of the many things that separates progressives from liberals is understanding that government has power.
Yes,
and
yes.
It can, right? Like that's an important distinction. It matters who controls it. It matters what it does, and it matters how it intersects with our lives.
Absolutely. And, you know, it struck me, though, that one of the reasons that we get stuck having this debate over and over again is because we actually have let the private insurance company, like, determine the framing, right, for our national conversations about healthcare. So I wondered, Jordan, how you thought in general about this idea of sort of letting your enemy do your message, letting your enemy set the terms on right. which you discuss
responding
an issue.
To the yeah.
This is the number one thing that leftists do. They take on arguments that the opponents do because we want to argue it. We want to be right. And not only that, but we take on the implicit emotional state that those things live in. So fear of government. So if you argue that government isn't something to be scared of, you're arguing on their terrain. You will always fail that test. You will always fail whether or not you're in those things. And we do this all the time. It's the number one technique. We want to argue in good faith with bad actors, and it makes no sense. They're not good actors. They're not interested in it. You know, my wife likes to say, she was doing a project and they were talking about closing schools in Boston. And some of the young people said, like, we understand that they have to close some schools. And she said, what do you mean they understand that? Who says that they have to close schools? And she said, well, that's what they're saying. And she said, yeah, but why? Right? Like, why do we take that on? Like, let's right. just say, let's not do that. Let's not close any schools. Right? Like, and they're like, oh, yeah. And like, that's the thing. We do that all the time. We do not have to argue in good faith with these systems or with corporations who are wedded to a system that does not work. And so I think this is an impulse that we have. It is the wrong impulse on everything we do. We need to answer their dumb ideas with our good ideas, not fix their dumb ideas, you know. And so we see it with everything with immigration and the awful ways we talk about it, and just like nonsense, right? Like it's flooding the border and all these other nonsense. Like my neighborhood is made up of refugees. I get great food with great spices and languages I never hear and really interesting people who did the most daring and amazing things ever, which is leave their home for someplace they've never been and hope. Those are amazing human beings. All of them are all of them have a wealth. Because some of them might be like bad people. I don't know what bad people, but people are people. They did good things and they did bad things. They're not angels and they're not saints. I mean, they're not angels and they're not terrible people. They are human beings, but they have lived, they have done things, and they are just as welcome here as I am, right? Like they have just as many things. And so we get into this weird dichotomy where we're fighting on their terrain rather than just dismissing the notion in and itself. Or more importantly, I would argue fighting the moral fight or fighting the emotional fight rather than fighting arguing with them intellectually, right? So a lot of the things that underpin the way that they intersect, the way the conservatives talk about these things is fear, hatred, right? Our worst angels, and we're arguing with facts. And that's, have you ever argued with a toddler? Like that's not, you can't, you know, you're not.
Trump talks, it's basically what you're talking about. It's all emotion.
It's emotive. And,
yeah.
And we need to be equally emotive, right? Like the problem isn't whether or not government should be involved. Government's involved. The question is, do you like this system? Is this working for you? Does this suck? Sucks for me. I've had asthma since I was 3 years old. It's a full-time job to get asthma every month, to get medication.
Oh my God.
For it.
This is dumb.
This is dumb. Let's not do it. No one else does it. What is this? Right? Like, why are we in their emotional state of private, public? No, this is dumb. They serve Blue Cross Blue Shield serves no purpose to take, except to steal from you. It steals from you, right? It takes money out of your pocket to do something that somebody else could do for a lot less money. It's stealing from you. I don't know. I don't want to get into the arguments.
Yeah, no, they're vampires without being sexy.
right. And so we just get into this, like, well, you know, like we get into the solution, Medicare for all. We get into the emotional, this will work. It works better. And we don't live in the emotional state, which is, this is stupid. Everyone hates it. No one does it. We could do something better.
Yeah.
Like, let's get in the emotional place.
So in some ways, like it sounds like what you're saying is that we need to, and I very much agree with this, that we actually need to match the conservative anger with anger in some
ways. Yeah, there needs to be a bad guy. You ever see it? It's like trying to watch a Marvel movie where there's no bad guys. Even My Little Pony, which I've watched every episode of with my daughter.
You're a brony.
I am, I guess, a brony at this point. I have, I they always have somebody who did something wrong. Now they learn their lesson and they end up being on the side of doing the right thing in the end because it's Milo Pony, but somebody does something. They're never just like walking around like just like everything's good. There's always a problem. That's the basic of human understanding. There's a problem. Somebody's responsible for it. You need to tell that story for people.
So using storytelling, period, is it's a different communication method than making academic arguments, essentially. Or
sloganeering. Yeah.
I think it would be great, Ben, if you talked about the report that also that talked a little bit about bringing this in. I think it's important for people to know that it's not just me popping off. There's actual a lot of study behind this.
Yeah.
There's back me up, Ben.
to immediately dump some facts on you instead of storytelling.
We know the audience. We know who's tuning in.
There was a report done a few years back by our allies at NESRI, who are now renamed Partners for Dignity and Rights. And they released this report called Parroting the Right. And it was basically about how the health insurance industry was effectively able to get almost the entire media landscape and polling landscape to use the health insurance industry's framing of how we discuss universal healthcare, essentially. So if you've ever heard the phrase, or the comparison between government-run healthcare and private health insurance, then you have already been a victim of the health insurance industry's lobbying campaign to get their messaging out there. And you'll notice that you'll never see a comparison of corporate-run healthcare with government-run healthcare. You might never even hear the phrase corporate-run healthcare in the media or in a polling, in a public opinion poll. And you won't see private insurance versus public insurance. You'll see private insurance, which is kind of an abstract concept of the private, which, as Jordan was just saying, doesn't even really exist. And then you'll see government run, which is kind of anything run doesn't make you feel good about it, right? I mean, corporate run, government run, I mean, people running your life or running your health doesn't feel good. But this is how almost all polls of Medicare for All are worded. They ask you not whether you support Medicare for All, but they'll say, do you support a government-run healthcare that would abolish private health insurance or something like that? That's the Harris polling, that's the Gallup polling, that's CBS, that's NBC, that's Morning Consult, the whole range. And this is how reporters use language also around this. One thing I was saying is we don't even really know how many people support Medicare for All because almost every single poll uses this kind of biased framing. And the remarkable thing is how many people still support it. Even with that wording, it's still
because of how bad the system is.
Right.
They're basically like, would you prefer a healthcare gulag? And people are like, compared to the current system? Yes. Thank you. Bring on the gulag.
I remember that there was a poll asking people if they supported socialized medicine versus this our current healthcare system, and they said yes. So even all the anti-socialist rhetoric wasn't enough to overcome how shit our healthcare system is.
I mean, I testified on behalf of Medicare for All Massachusetts. And the thing I, testified to is we have socialized medicine. What do you think insurance is? It's socialism. Everybody pays in and they divvy it out based on need to people. I was like, the problem is that they're bad at it. These corporate run, us funded socialist medicine is bad. We should just do it the real way. And just rather than what's currently happening, which is 20 to 40% is being siphoned off to make Wall Street rich. And guess what? That's actually a really terrible way to do medicine because it's not a marketplace. I'm not a market. I'm not going to die to save money. Rather, this is a dumb idea. And so it's already socialized, already socializing our money, but they're doing it inefficiently for the sole purposes of making money for Wall Street. And you know what? Like government could do it better. Like, it's as simple as that. Like, they're bad at it. I think I testified to, because I've testified right after their lobbyists. And I said, look, he seems like a nice guy. He's just bad at his job. And there's nothing wrong with that. They're all bad at their jobs. They can't keep the cost down. They've tried. And to make profit while doing it, we need somebody else to do it who's bigger. And that's what the government could do, especially what's happening right now with hospitals privatizing, with groups privatizing, right? Like all of these systems are in place to maximize the profit for Wall Street to take, and maximize profit for Wall Street is also not a real term, to steal money from you and to give it to rich people who are already rich. The system is geared towards that, not to provide you healthcare, to steal from you, to make money for people who do literally nothing, who do not provide you health care, who do not make you healthier, who didn't go to school to become doctors. They didn't do anything productive in the system. They do literally nothing productive in this system except to steal from you.
That's doing a thing, taking money from us.
Yes, right. That's all it does.
It's a profession.
It is a profession, but it's not. That's all they do. And right. We could have a system better run with the government doing it, right? The same exact processes.
This reminds me, when you brought up hospitals, you're actually having a problem with your local hospital right now, right? In Worcester, Massachusetts.
I think one of the things that also happens is everything about this system is broken. Everything about this system is broken. And that's why everyone hates it and wants it to change. And our hospital is called St. Vincent's, who was a saint to the poor. And it got sold by the Catholic Church to Tenet Healthcare. And I like to joke that Tenet Corporation is a criminal organization that occasionally pretends to do healthcare.
Right.
Almost every year of its existence, it has been fined. That's another, like if it were black, it would be arrested, not fined. It is fined for fraud. Fraud is a word for crime. They committed crimes. They've committed crimes in 1990, 1993, 1994, all throughout the 2000s. And like things like, not just like, oh, like they mismanaged, like they created fake beds and billed the government for it. They are a criminal enterprise that pretends to do healthcare and nothing happens to them.
God, we should deport these illegal hospitals.
Right. They're from Texas. They're not even from Massachusetts, right? Texas, it's deported.
We don't
want
them back, thanks.
And again, recently, they got fined again this year for breaking the law around nursing staffing. You know, they were like, we don't know what the nurses are talking about. The nurses were like, you're literally breaking the law. We signed an agreement. You're not living. It's just like, they do not care. And it's just a rounding error. And the thing is, this is, you know, and it still has the name St. Vincent's, right? It's not corporation willing to steal your money. People have this association with this locally run Catholic hospital that's no longer any of those things. It is a criminal organization with amazing human beings trying to help people in it while the people in charge are stealing.
yeah, that's absolutely perfect.
And that's your hospital. This isn't just our hospital. Wherever you are in the world listening to this, that's your hospital.
Same thing, right?
It's the same thing. It has a different name, but it's the same thing.
Right. So this is a bit of a segue, but I wanted to talk about another messaging area in the Medicare for All movement. There, speaking of activist bubbles, which we were talking about before, like activist messaging bubbles, there are constant, almost endless debates over messaging within our movement, as in most movements. And one of the debates is about the use of rights-based language in healthcare. And we've had this debate actually from a couple of different angles. One angle was there was a almost successful effort to get Medicare for All in Vermont a number of years back. And that group used only rights-based language, and they actually would not even talk about single-payer healthcare or Medicare for All or policy solutions. They just said, we need to fix this system. It needs to meet these four or five criteria. And there was at the time four or five other state groups that kind of adopted that model. They're like, we're only doing rights-based language. On the other side of things, one of the very few kind of focus group polling efforts that's been paid for to look at how we message about Medicare for All was done in Minnesota. And they did focus groups and polled only independents in kind of middle of the road folks in Minnesota, and found that that they had poor reactions to rights-based language, that that calling healthcare a right was seen as kind of a flag for whether you're a Democrat or a Republican. If you say yes, you're a Democrat. If you're not, you're seen as Republican. So they were saying, consider using, you know, healthcare as a basic human need or a basic necessity or something like that instead of rights-based language. So I'm just curious how you tease all this out and think about rights-based language.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I'd say I think that they're not really different from what they're actually getting at, which is we need to get away from leading with solutions, which are very much what leftists like to do. We like to, because we've gone through some sort of emotional roadmap. It might be even milliseconds. We barely think about it. We hear about something, we filter it through our own values, and then we figure out, do we support it? Why do we support it? And then we say, go support it. But that emotional journey to hear about something, to actually supporting it or wanting to be for it, we need to lead people who don't care, who don't understand it, who don't live this every day through that emotional journey and not skip directly to the solution. And so it's not that we can't say Medicare for all, but we need to, before you get there, you need to prime people on what, on their emotional state, right? Like we need to live a little in their emotional state. We tend to think we don't. We're just like, oh, we're just factual. That's not true. We've actually done that emotional journey. It's just often we barely notice that we're going through it. And so whether or not you say it's a right or you say a need, right? They're just what you're basically getting into is you're getting into what a lot of pollsters are saying is what can people hear in swing areas? What can they hear? But I would argue that both of them are short skirting the piece that I always like to talk about, which is like the system's broken. And then we need to remind people that they hate what's here. Because if we jump to the solution, then people have an emotional state about the possible solutions. And what we actually need is people to be outraged about, like, you'll notice conservatives actually never have solutions. I mean, they don't have ideas anymore, except like fascism, but they literally don't have a solution to any problems. Right?
There's no healthcare platform of the Republican Party anymore. So.
Yeah, not just that. Like I was reading just really simple things. I get the local Worcester Chambers newspaper. And the newspaper,
the Chamber of Commerce.
The Chamber of Commerce is missing, right? Mm. A moderate, quote unquote, moderate, you know, chamber in Massachusetts, right? And even there, they're like, we want to do these things, but they also oppose every form of taxation.
Right.
So even these quote unquote moderates, conservatives literally don't have ideas on how to pay for things because they're opposed to any way to pay for things. Right. Like they're just like, we should do. So they were like, we need childcare is important. Small businesses need workers who have childcare. And there's not only was there policy solution for childcare to not actually provide childcare, which was amusing. It was like, give a little bit of money to the poor for childcare. Like it wasn't actually going to solve the problem, but when you go like literally, I flip the next page and it's just a page full of opposing taxes. They don't even bother to try to figure out how to make their ideas possible anymore. And this is the smart people, the adult people, the Chamber of Commerce, blah, 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 right? Like they don't even bother having a logic model to their ideas.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I'm not saying that we shouldn't, we do. We have a very clear idea of how to solve these problems, but I do think we need to be more in that initial stage. We need to be more in the outrage stage. People need to feel like when they go to pay their bills for the Medicare system, that it comes with a pitchfork, right? Like I need more outrage at people, at these systems. No one has ever, as far as I know, no one has ever like gone to Tenet executives and protested them. No one's ever been in front of United Healthcare and been like, you're stealing from us, right? Like we don't even use that language. You know, we're like, what is like, you know, I people look at me like a bonkers. I'm like, they literally provide no service except to take mm-hmm. money from you. Like they're just taking money off the top. They've socialized our money like a government would, but they just stealing it and giving it to Wall Street.
They call it rent seeking, right? In economics.
Yeah. And I was just like people yeah. look at me like I'm bonkers. I'm like, well, they explain to me what you think they do. And they'll just explain to you exactly what I just said. Right? Like, and I'm just like, you should be mad about that. Right. You should be really mad about that.
Maybe so one thing you could clarify, Jordan, also is that a lot of times people have this debate, like this messaging debate, as if they are all spending millions of dollars on like TV ads or something, whereas none of us actually have the capital to run a massive, you know, independent persuasion TV campaign. Usually we're just talking to other people in a one-on-one basis, which is you don't necessarily need that kind of a messaging debate if you're talking to other humans one-on-one, right?
So. You want to convince people to Medicare for All? I do this every time at the doctor, sitting next to random people.
Yes. Let's do it. I want to hear Jordan's plan for the campaign.
Do you wait a long time for this visit? Yeah, you know, long time. This sucks. No one else does this. We could have a better system. Really? Yeah. Other countries just let the government do it. I don't know why we don't do that. That's it. That's the right conversation. You know, I'm online, and every time I have to go through something and it takes forever, I just put up how much it costs me, why it's dumb. And I just say to people, this is dumb. We shouldn't do this. And somebody will always chime in Medicare for All, and I'll be like, well, at least not this. Like, let's just start with that. Let's not do that. And people will say the same thing. This sucks. If you say to somebody, everybody has a story about this system being terrible, that's where we need to be. So, we don't always need to jump to telling people, look, yes, we have a great solution. I'm not against it, but let people be outraged. If the answer to this costs too much and this sucks is, yeah, you know, that corporation sucks. Yeah, that executive is the reason. Did you know how much fraud there is in the system? Right? We need people to pile on about how terrible these corporations are, about how little oversight, about how little how things. And then when people are outraged, you can really get into but we have something that, you know, and I always preface a solution, because the other piece that they do is they make it sound like Medicare for All is this bonkers leftist idea that no one else does. But I remind people, the answer I always say is we can just do what other countries do. We need to remind people that we're the outlier, that no one runs their healthcare the way we run our healthcare. And so that is helpful to remind people that we're the outlier and there's other people who have managed some sort of hybrid systems or more socialized systems, but this is dumb. And so that's where I would encourage people to go rather than continuing to always get into these side debates. And you're really just have conversations, a human conversation about how much we're all outraged all the time.
Yes, yes. In our trainings, I'm constantly telling people that it's time to put your human hat on, you know,
I'll say the other thing, which I said beforehand when we first started, and I always say this to every activist and organizer, is if you do this long enough, you'll sit around and somebody will walk into an electoral office or a campaign office, or they'll come onto your Zoom and they'll say, I don't really want to talk to people. Where are the decisions made about the messaging or the strategy? And I'm always just like, yeah, you missed that 10-minute meeting at the beginning of this campaign. It's not like a murder board where you have strings going other directions. It's really simple. And we just need to do, and actually what we need most is people to bravely have conversations with people about this as much as possible to get people outraged. Maybe join an organization, donate to said organization. If you don't want to have a conversation, you got money in your pocketbook, it's going to a crappy corporation. Pay somebody else for their time to do it for you, right? We don't need more people who don't know what they're doing arguing about messaging or arguing about tactics. We need regular people to do the things we know works, which is talk to people or pay somebody to talk to someone.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's a very good point. And in fact, people can donate to healthcare now by going to our website at www.healthcare-now.org. But
well done. Well done.
Yeah, I think also one of the things that we like to stress is conversation. And conversation is actually not just messaging at someone, right? Conversation is also listening to someone. And I think that that's something that really gets lost in leftist communities, is that we're not actually delivering information to people. We're supposed to be talking to people. And like you said, going on that emotional journey with them, you know?
Yeah. We're always trying to give them the best argument, the policy solution, the facts. I have this problem myself. I love facts. I love data. I'm into those places. But what really people need is you want to get them into a guided conversation where they're airing out their frustrations.
Yes, 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 yes.
But you know what would be even better than organizing in conversations? Another 50 white dudes who've read a George Lakoff book.
Oh God,
really bring the messaging.
Oh, it's so frustrating. It is. It's not rocket science. I have been in a lot of those rooms. I have been in rooms. I have been in rooms where top Democrats are arguing about how to get refight the 1994 election as if those white men are coming back. I understand that frustration. Like, it's not that I don't understand that impulse or that frustration. It's just that it's a waste of time. It's just an absolute, like, we are increasingly, as we see from the way the country's going, there is a leftist bubble mostly online that is self-reinforcing and talks to itself and is self-important. And it is increasingly detached from power or even interested in power. I see people who are, meanwhile, America's like moving in a totally other direction. And we're, because of social media, because of things like, we're just reinforcing ourselves. And we do need an echo chamber. We do need to talk to each other, but we need to realize that we're talking to each other. Like, I see so many people talking as if they're putting out a press release. And someone is reading me. I'm like, no, man, like, you're talking to the five people who care what you think about this leftist idea. Talk to them like a person who's having a community conversation, not like you're putting out a press release and everybody cares what you say, because they don't.
It's there's a meme going around online that's like, why is it that every time a man gets into an argument with a woman on Facebook, all of a sudden his language becomes like the 18th century, like, I find that it is unconscionable to argue.
Shakespearean all of a sudden.
Yeah, right? It just doesn't make any sense. We just need to, we are in a bubble. And the media landscape, but less the media landscape, because there's sort of like right of center to bonkers right wing. There's not a lot of anywhere else. All of these social media platforms are self-reinforcing bubbles. And the only anecdote for that is 18th century technology. You got to go knock on a door. You got to go talk to regular people, learn something about their lives. Young organizers will ask me, like, what's the one piece of advice? I'm always like, door knock. You got to talk to regular people and get, like, they're not living your life. Whatever it is you care about, it's not the things that they're regularly caring about. And you got to get out of that bubble, which isn't to say you shouldn't have space where you're, but know that that's it, right? Like, know that a rally's purpose is to self-reinforce each other, to gird each other for the fight that's going to happen in the future, right? It's not, change is not happening there. It's to make you feel better so that you can go do the hard work of talking to regular people, right? Like, that's a really important piece to Medicare for All. We need to get out and have emotions, and value.